quality above quantity. My man travels a lot. We have a child and a busy lifestyle. So we often end up being dead tired the few times that we do actually see each other and have time to play. But a good example of this was last night. We had an amazing weekend with you guys, very playful and sensual and spicy. But my man didn't come over the weekend. And so whilst driving home, he was like, I'm so horny. I'm traveling on Tuesday. Maybe tomorrow night we can plan a little rendezvous. But then came last night. And after having dinner with our kid and talking about all the practical things that we needed to do, we're like, man, I'm just so tired. And then, you know what? Why don't we just lie down, put on a couple of candles? Let's not focus on having sex. Let's just lie naked and feel each other's bodies. And actually, it turned out to be a very erotic, playful night, because once we started to relax, we got so into this erotic sensual flow that we actually had mind-blowing sex, which was not intended.
Welcome to Deeper Sex, where your hosts, Chiara, Will, and Ali, we're three friends whose lives have been transformed by getting curious and creative about sex. This podcast is about what we've learned on our adventures. It's about how sex can help people heal and grow and deepen their relationships. So we want to help you connect with your own sexual energy, to communicate and build trust and confidence.
We're quite kinky, but don't run away just yet. Wherever you're at, I promise the best sex of your life can be in your future, not in your past. We do tell explicit stories about our experiences together, so please stop listening if you're not an adult. Otherwise, stick around, because we believe we've found our holy grail, and we hope you'll find yours too.
Welcome back to the podcast Bed. I'm here with Chiara and Ali. We are all feeling very loved up and sexy after the weekend we just got back from. We had such a beautiful staycation. Me and Chiara and Ali and her man went away to this beach hotel and had the most beautiful evening together of intimacy and sensuality and horny, horny sex. And as always, coming back for the couple of days after then, the connection between me and Chiara was so beautiful and was so loved up. And of course, we had, as always, amazing post-orgy sex between the the way it goes. And I was thinking to myself today, back over my previous relationships and over what sex has been before, and looking back to those times in my life when I was feeling unfulfilled in sex and like I wasn't getting what I wanted and what I wasn't getting what I needed. And when in past relationships, the people who I was with were in their own ways feeling the same way about things and about negativity that there is in your life when you're not getting what you need out of sex and you're not feeling fulfilled by it. In our case, part of the solution has been to open our horizons and to some extent open our relationships and to bring so many other various erotic and sexy situations into the mix. None of that would have worked without the work that we've done in our relationship and with ourselves about it. So I thought it would be worth reflecting on when you're in one of those places in your life, when you feel that your relationship has lost its fire and has lost its erotic charge. And even if the relationship itself seems fine, like the sex is gone, the sex is not what it should be, what needs to change? And how do you go about getting that relationship back into the kind of place where we've got ourselves into now? I guess that's our topic for today. What's actually wrong when a relationship has lost its sexual charge? And what, based on our own experiences, can people do about it to get into a place like we're feeling we are now?
I think I know, because I've experienced this before and also thinking about lots of friends, girlfriends like I speak to, not having sex within a couple is a very common problem, especially after you've hit your 30s, maybe you got married, maybe you've had kids, and the intimacy and literally the sex within the couple is maybe less of a priority. And I would say 85-90% of my friends, males and females, report back in saying how unfulfilling their sex life is. Not all of them, but a big part of them. And when you try to dig deeper and you try to figure out what are the problems, what are the issues that they're having, it's not about, oh, we don't love each other anymore. It's not about we would rather have an affair or look for something else more exciting outside. But very often sounds, oh, but we just don't have time. And I'm a big believer that where there's a will, there's a way. And if you really want to do something, you will make the time to do something, whether it's having a coffee with a friend or having sex with your partner. But we are so used to having this super busy lives. You know, in work, we need to be as productive as possible. And I listen to podcasts at 1.5% speed so that I can get more content into my brain in less time and I can learn faster. So we all have this kind of attitude towards we need to cram as much as possible into our time so we can get more stuff done, or we can meet more people, we can see more friends, we can be more out there, we can buy more things, that we forget that sometimes maybe all you need to do is to slow down and regroup. And in this case, reconnect with your partner if the problem you're having is you're not connecting enough. A lot of people that I've talked to report in the coaching sessions that they have with me is that they don't have time. And speaking of prioritizing what you need and what you want, you might be a very busy mom or wife with maybe one or two kids, and maybe you have a full-time job. But I know, because I also have friends, and Ali, here you're one of the models that I follow, one of the living examples that actually can prove the opposite. And so what needs to be done is maybe pull the brakes a little bit on, okay, we need to arrange the next brunch and the next holiday and the next dinner with friends, etc., or the next weekend away in the mountains with these other friends. And maybe say, you know what, this weekend we turn our phones off. If we have a child, maybe we live with the grandparents or with the nanny, or we arrange like a play date or a sleepover with friends, and just you and I go away somewhere nice where we can reconnect and spend time with each other, because maybe we're just not used to just spending good quality time with each other, unless we're talking about the next plan and the next holiday and the next dinner and the next little Christmas tree that we need to buy. What's your experience, Ali?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very important, especially when you enter parenthood as a couple or been together for a long time, is to keep prioritizing time for just the two of you. And I think that has definitely been a saver for my man's and I's relationship. We always made sure to plan in the next date. I know that people say, oh, sex should be spontaneous and it should be in the moment. But with parenthood and careers and busy lifestyles and friends and whatever else you need to cater to, I think it's important to plan in time for yourselves, because otherwise you don't prioritize. And also you're indirectly saying to each other that you don't prioritize your relationship. So for us, it has always been a priority to put the next couple's date away in the calendar. And for us, that's already a build-up, because we start looking forward and we start planning and we start fantasizing about what we're going to do or play, or I buy naughty lingerie. So that has definitely kept the fire alive between us and communication alive as well.
What would you say to people that might think, oh, but what you're suggesting is selfish and you're not giving enough time to, I don't know, your child or to your friends or to your other responsibilities?
Selfish is good, because selfish keeps attention on your relationship. And if you don't put attention to your relationship and foster it, it's going to die. It's like a plant. You need to water it and give it love.
And I love the fact that you said that being selfish in this case is good, because I know a lot of people and a lot of girlfriends that think that giving time to themselves and their partner is selfish and, oh no, they're doing something wrong towards their children. And so they wouldn't want to prioritize this. But as you're saying, it's really important if you want to sit together with your partner for the children, right?
I would actually argue the opposite. I think it's really important also for your kids' sake that you keep a healthy, loving, playful relationship between you two as parents. First of all, you're role models to them. And second, if the relationship goes down the drain because you don't foster it, that's going to affect the kids even more.
Absolutely. As having been the daughter of parents that were fighting all the time, it would have been much better to actually see parents that maybe were not taking me away with them every weekend where I was getting incredibly bored, but also was seeing them fighting all the time. But rather seeing parents that, okay, maybe I don't spend every single weekend with them, but when I see them together at the evening in the kitchen or whatever, they're loving and they're something that I want to aim at being when I grow up.
One of the things that people tell me is a barrier to this kind of sexual reconnection that we're talking about is the amount of relationship baggage that people bring to the sexual connection. Often from the man's point of view, but not always, there is resentment that he's not getting more sex or the kind of sex that he wants. And so he's very goal-directed about wanting to get laid in a particular way that he has in his mind. And sometimes, in fact, that's fueled or driven or colored by what sex looks like in popular culture, in porn, on Instagram. Everybody's having this wild, free, porny experience with sex. And so there's this sense of FOMO. I should be having that and I'm not getting that. And almost like I'm entitled to that. But what happened for me in my journey that brought me into the place that I am now is that I spent a long time on inner work and spiritual work. And it took actually years for me to get here and to understand that when I want sex, actually what I need is something different from that. And there's a lot of things under the surface that were invisible to me before. In fact, a lot of what I want is actually connectedness and sensuality and intimacy. It's not so much getting sex as things like feeling desired is a big part of it. And in fact, you can access that sense of feeling desired and feeling seen through a much wider range of activities and things than just having sex. So sensuality can give you the sense of feeling desired. I've arrived at a place now where, luckily, we do have a lot of amazing sex, so I do get laid every day at least once, and I'm not complaining about that side of things. But I would actually be happy with a lot less sex if that had to be the case. Like, if we had really good quality sex, maybe once a week, if one of us or both of us had to travel and be apart, that would definitely be enough for me now. I wouldn't feel like I was missing out. Because in the sexual energy of the relationship, I know that desire is there, that connection is there. And I think a lot of that is to do with taking away the goal-directed box ticking. I need to get laid X number of times in these particular ways in order to feel fulfilled. Because that's a futile exercise in the end. That's like a seeking of validation that's never going to be enough. In fact, it always would feel empty. Whereas if you arrive in a sexual connection with a partner which is so relaxed and intimate and sensual, that can so easily be enough. And that's also a solution to the time problem as well. Time is so precious, particularly that amount of time where both of you are able to really drop in and relax into the sexual connection, which means forgetting, letting go of these ideas about what the kids are up to, letting go of the stress about work. Nobody's going to be able to access that every day or multiple times a week when you have a busy life. But that's really the key to it. The ways into that are sensuality and intimacy and really open communication so that you both understand what you really are looking for and what you really need. A kind of vulnerability and honesty with yourself, in fact. Because you can tell me how this works from a female perspective, but from a male perspective, there is instinctively, there's this kind of performative part of what sex is as well. So if I'm not getting laid a lot, or if I'm not performing in a certain way in sex, then I'm somehow not acting like a man should act or being what a man should be. And now that I talk about it, it's remarkable because I remember feeling that way and I completely don't feel that way anymore. I feel like I got absolutely nothing to prove. And that completely recasts what sex is. It takes all of the pressure out of it. It makes it so much easier to drop and relax into when all you have to do is be in the exact moment where you are right now. And this is interesting as well because what excites us about our sex lives now is the part of it which is adventurous, because we are in the lifestyle and we do go to swinger parties and have quite wild times with people. But that stuff in many ways is pretty irrelevant to our relationship. It's disposable to our relationship. It really is. If we had to stop doing it tomorrow, that would be absolutely fine, because it's just an expression of the close connected connection that we have between us now.
Definitely for quality above quantity. My man travels a lot. We have a child and a busy lifestyle. So we often end up being dead tired the few times a week or month that we do actually see each other and have time to play. But a good example of this was last night. We had an amazing, mind-blowing weekend with you guys. Very playful and sensual and spicy. But my man didn't come over the weekend. And so whilst driving home from this adventure, he was like, I'm so horny. I'm traveling on Tuesday, maybe. Tomorrow night, we can plan a little rendezvous, just the two of us. And I was like, yeah, of course, honey, let's do that. But then came last night. And after having dinner with our kid and talking about all the planning and the practical things that we needed to do, taking a shower, ending up in bed, and we both looked at each other and we're like, man, I'm just so tired. And then we're like, you know what? Why don't we just lie down, put on a couple of candles? Let's not focus on having sex, but let's just enjoy some intimacy. Let's just lie naked next to each other and feel each other's bodies. And maybe we just pass out. And actually, it turned out to be a very erotic, playful night, because once we started to relax and let our thoughts disappear, we got so into this erotic sensual flow that we actually had mind-blowing sex, which was not intended. And the other thing to this, just to add to, I think a lot of people become lazy in their relationships. Yeah, because relationships, like anything else, takes a little work. It doesn't have to become this massive hurdle, but it's really important. I still put a pair of naughty knickers in my husband's travel suitcase. I still send him a little loving text or a sexy message almost every day. And it takes me 2 minutes. I still write something on the mirror when he comes home in the middle of the night from a business trip. I still plan a naughty night away once in a while. And if you want to keep anything alive, whether it's your relationship with your child or your friendships or your business relationships, you have to put in time and work. And the same goes for your relationships. And for some reason, people think that once they're married or once they're together for a certain couple of years, that's just supposed to flow automatically on rails. And no, that's not how it works. Like anything else, you need to put in time, effort, and attention. And this is really fun stuff to do.
I completely agree. There's this thing, Will, you were talking about the frequency of having sex and should you have it every day, or what happens when you don't have it every day? Because you were saying that men have this kind of goal of, okay, I need to get laid every day. There are tons of stats that say and ask how often should a healthy couple have sex. And there's people that say 3 times a week. But then actually I was listening to another podcast with a well-known sex therapist. And she was saying actually it's 3 times a month. And I have been in the past in relationships where I was almost mocking my partner, and I was horrible and I regret doing that, but I was almost mocking him for not wanting to have sex as often as I wanted. But the problem was not the frequency, but maybe more the laziness that you mentioned on both sides of, oh, okay, but we have this other thing to do. Oh, okay, but we're tired. That resulted into a number of other issues. And so the problem was not having enough sex and enough intimacy, but a ton of other problems that brought the relationship to an end. I think, again, quality over quantity and not having a specific goal in mind. And when I talk about specific goal, also could be we have some sex and some intimacy, but there is not a specific goal of make the other person come, for example, which sometimes can be harder for men, especially if their mind is on work or the female partner is thinking about the child that has a little hand fever, you know, earlier in the day.
Taking off the pressure of the goal-oriented outcome, like you have to have sex this many times a week to be a proper husband, or you have to make a person come, I think is very helpful.
Yes, and in fact, it's remarkable that in all of the time that we have been playing together as the four of us, neither me nor your man has come in what must be a combined days and days worth of continuous playtime.
That's also partly greed, because I had a conversation with him and he said, you know, I could come like in the first couple of sessions, but then I also know it takes time to build it up again and I really want to enjoy it all. And yeah, then I just postpone and enjoy the journey, and then I leave it to you to make me come when I get home.
Yeah, it's partly the same for me as well, because the journey is far more exciting than the very brief end of it. But it's also true that among the four of us, we have very little actual penetrative sex.
Yeah.
It's something that happens occasionally, but it's not what people think happens when you're having a foursome. And it's definitely not what happens in porn when you're having a foursome.
Far from. This would be way better porn.
And in fact, the sex that we have together as the four of us is much more intimate and playful and sensual than really any of the sex that I've had in any of my other relationships or even like short encounters.
Woohoo, Will, love the compliment.
Yeah. But isn't it remarkable how through being in the lifestyle and having our relationships non-monogamous, that has, it's almost paradoxical how that has given us all a gateway to a less goal-driven, a less transactional, a less formulaic kind of sex than existed beforehand. This is one of the really interesting things I find about the lifestyle, in fact. People who haven't experimented or been in it much often see it as wanting to fill a gap in an existing relationship or wanting to go out and get more sex. And that kind of idea is about being more goal-directed, ticking more boxes, getting laid much more. Whereas for us, and I hope for lots of people who are interested in this lifestyle, in fact, it's like an experiment. It's like a proving ground. It's like a place where you can try out and test and explore and see what you're interested in and absorb the energy and the inspiration from other people outside the couple, whether you're even participating with others. Maybe you're going to a play party and you're just watching, or maybe you're going to a play party and you're only interacting with your own partner while others watch, or even while others don't. If you're in a closed space, you expose yourself to more people, more energies and more ideas, and you bring that energy back into your partnership. Like, the benefit of that doesn't accrue just to you as an individual having a horny situation. It's like almost going to the museum or going to the library, like to learn new ideas and bring in new things and then be enriched by it. And that's really the energy we approach this whole thing with.
We've talked about this a lot, actually, in another episode where we focus on talking about intimacy in and out of the lifestyle. And here, if we want to go back and talk to the couples out there that may not be and are not interested in getting into the lifestyle because just to be clear, this is, we're not suggesting here that, oh, if you're not having enough sex in your couple, then go out and open the relationship and try the lifestyle and this will fix your problems. This is not what we are suggesting here. What we're saying is that even by us getting into the lifestyle and getting to know, example, alien or men, there are a lot of things that we have learned and then experienced and then brought back to our own bed just between you and I that we wouldn't know and wouldn't have tried before if we had not been exposed to this. Because, of course, if we try to watch porn, we definitely would not learn sensuality, I would say.
Yes, and the thing he brought back into our relationship yesterday was Ali's tiny little red thong, which you wore in our bed last night.
Ooh.
That was definitely inspiring, making love to both of you at the same time.
One of the things that I've realized in my previous relationship where not having enough sex was a problem, and funny enough, Will, you were mentioning earlier, that's often a problem for men saying, oh, I'm not getting enough sex in the relationship. In my case, it was the other way around. I was the one that was complaining that I wasn't having enough sex. And yes, people might have a different libido or different issues, but I also know of other female friends having this problem, so I wouldn't say it's just a man-related problem. It can also be a women-related problem. What I was really focused on was, oh, it's your fault. You're not giving me enough time. You're too focused on work. You don't feel like it's enough. I was being the victim, blaming the other person. And for sure, the other person had some blame, but what I wasn't seeing was the behavior that I was having and that I needed to change for things to get better. I had a very strong personality, very much my masculine. I was working in sales at the time, so very controlling behavior and kind of imposing behavior, almost selling things and ideas inside the relationship as well. So I was being a bit like the CEO of the relationship without really giving much power to the other to come out and to flourish. I was being quite harsh. And so what I was not seeing is that also my behavior, very masculine, controlling, imposing, was not really helping my man, who is a great man, but obviously maybe there was something in there that was not particularly making him feel like trying to have a bit more of intimacy with me, because, oh, what if I do something wrong? What if she criticizes me again for this thing? And to be honest, in the intimacy part, I was actually very quiet and I wasn't really saying anything because I had this completely different behavior outside than probably there was a big fear on the other end. So what I'm trying to say here is I was focused on blaming the other person, but what I should have really focused on was to look at myself and my behavior and do some work myself, while at the same time my partner also needed to do his work on himself and his insecurities, etc. And maybe if we had done both of this work at the same time on ourselves instead of blaming each other and focusing on the problems that each other was bringing, then maybe we could have saved that relationship. We only figured that out later, but that was a really big learning that probably could have saved our relationship back then.
I think when it comes to relationships, like anything else, the more you give, the more you get. Because I've also been in previous relationships where the blame game started to happen, and that only fuels it from both sides, right? The more you start blaming the other, then the other person starts blaming you, and the gap becomes wider and wider. And between my man and I definitely learned that the more you give and the more you open up and the more you explain what it is that you need, the more you receive back. Yeah. So when I met my man, I was definitely in a more comfortable space talking about sensuality, sexuality. And so I was very open and inquisitive in a fun way. And so that opened up for a lot of conversations. But I was also very good at asking in a positive way or telling him what I needed. And he was able to do the same. Again, men think that they need to perform, they need to be sexy studs and sexy beasts. I craved intimacy and I craved sensuality. And along the way, actually, my man learned that intimacy and sexuality is really fun and sexy and playful. And now sex, or the actual act of sex or penetration, comes second or sometimes even third or fourth. And yeah, it's an added benefit when it happens and it's amazing, but the sensuality and the intimacy weighs a lot more. And is a lot more powerful in our sexual relationship.
The idea of giving each other space and a safe space, I think it's really important. And whenever we talk about communication and how couples can better communicate, providing a safe space for the other person is key. So if we manage to give the other person the comfort of being themselves, knowing that they're not being judged, knowing that they're not being blamed, knowing that we don't have any specific expectations. And of course, it's okay to have expectations in a couple. Hey, I take care of this, you take care of that, and so on and so forth. But in that sense, not having expectations, you don't have to come, you don't have to get hired within the first 2 minutes, and so on and so forth, allows the other person becoming comfortable and relaxing and letting go, and therefore being more present and having and receiving a better experience.
There's nothing unsexier than resentment or expectation coming at you from the other side, because it takes away your ability to drop in. And the best, most beautiful sexual experiences, both as a couple but also as a larger group, are those moments when I can just take off my armor and drop in to whatever it is that's happening right now. Sometimes that's something that's happening to me, which is, it's a beautiful kind of surrender to be able to, especially as a man, to be able to just receive. It's such a burden to carry, to have to be always the one who is giving and doing, because your attention always has to be on the other person or people and what you're performing and what you're doing. But being able just to drop in and receive it's actually a very vulnerable thing. It's a difficult thing to do. And it requires you to be in a very open-hearted place. It requires you to be very present. It requires you to trust in this idea that whatever happens here right now, it's okay and it's fine, and it doesn't matter where it leads or where it goes. When you were talking about the things that you do for your man, like leaving some sexy underwear in his bag when he travels, I love the playfulness of that. And this sense of play is always present when there's something amazing happening. It's usually there among the four of us. It's not so serious. One of the things I really don't like about many swinger lifestyle parties events is that everybody just looks so serious. Either they're roaming around on the hunt, wondering who they're going to get next, or when they're actually doing what they're doing, it's so serious. There's no smiles and laughs. And Kiara, when you and me are at those events, there isn't a moment when we haven't got a smile on our faces and our teeth are showing, and it's happy and playful and fun. And that's the energy to come with. That's the place to start from. And you really have to find a way to get rid of the baggage that you're bringing to these situations to get there.
You were talking about taking your armor off. And from a man's perspective, what do you think is the most difficult thing to do for a man to take off their armor? And what would you suggest women that they do to allow for their men to have the space to take off that armor?
Most of what has allowed me to take off my armor has been actually not to do with sex and not to do with relationships. It has been the inner work that I have done to understand my own psychological makeup, my own conditioning, my own hang-ups, my own neuroses and anxieties. And that took many years of work in various spiritual modalities to get here. It also took me hitting rock bottom in various ways in my life, and then finding the help of the right kinds of people and guides and coaches to put myself back together in the way I had to. It required a lot of honesty with myself to get past my own ego. In fact, I think a lot of it is about ego. And the ego defends itself. The ego doesn't want to have to confront the real truth that we all are fallible. We all have inner children who need the right kinds of attention and the right kinds of love. And we need to trust in vulnerability in the end. And it was, there's a paradox in this as well, because I needed to reconnect with my authentic masculinity. I needed to stop performing as a man and actually connect with the man that I really was, which required me to expose myself and trust that the people who I was showing my true self to would accept and love the real person who I am. And that's a scary thing to do, because if, like many people, you come from a life history where you're not really sure that you're enough, you're not really sure that you're good enough, you're not really sure that you're lovable enough or attractive enough, you have this sense, your ego has this sense that I can't let anybody see who I really am, or I need to really direct people's attention towards A, B, and C about me. Otherwise, they won't find me attractive or they won't love me. And I think many people go through their lives living this ego defensive way. And that's the armor. And that armor protects you from the imagined judgment or the imagined, oh no, people aren't going to love me. But it also prevents you from dropping into real love and real sexuality and real sensuality as well, because you're never raw and you're never open. So for me, that wasn't work that I did in a relationship. But it's certainly true that finding you, Kiara, who was a person who mirrored back at me in your love, what was obviously an authentic vision of me, but also somebody who saw me deeply and loved what she saw, that was a beautiful catalyst for me being able to look inward at myself and say, hold on, actually, maybe I am okay. Maybe I am enough. I've always been so grateful that we met each other at this point in our lives where both of us had been through the same kinds of process. You'd been through your own process of de-armoring from that version of yourself, which was in its masculine, which wasn't really in touch with its receptive feminine. You'd been de-armoring from that in the same way I'd been de-armoring from all of the peripheral stuff I had around me. And here we are now in this beautiful place.
I love you so much. I am on a ton of Facebook groups where there's women that are complaining about the issues that they're having in their relationship, where one of the two parties are complaining on having enough sex or them not being able to get as much sex as they wanted. There's a lot of people asking for suggestion. Hey, do you have a good therapist or a counselor for myself and my husband, because we're having these issues in our relationship? And you just said you had to do a lot of inner work and coaching and spiritual work on yourself. What kind of therapy were you talking about? And did the couple of therapy that you did helped you? What kind of inner work helped you?
Here's, first of all, what didn't work. I went through many years of depression, and I went through a sequence of mainstream Western psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists who were good at what they did, but what they were doing was mainly cognitive behavioral therapy, reorganizing the way that I framed things, the way that my thoughts interacted with the world. And also mainstream psychopharmaceutical stuff, antidepressants and so on, which I'm so glad I no longer use any of. That stuff felt like it was working, but only skin deep at the superficial level. In relationships, I've been to fairly standard couples therapy to try to patch together relationships which were in great difficulty. And those were all very uncomfortable experiences, which basically revolved. It felt like a arbitration in a business dispute. So each person would be airing their grievances, and then the other person would be airing their grievances, and then the therapist would try to find or suggest some kind of middle ground between it. But all of that world of therapy that worked at that superficial level felt like it wasn't actually doing anything, but it was all available, and it was what the system promoted to us as what we were supposed to do. the work that actually worked was deeper, symbolic, spiritual work, which I had great resistance to for a long time. I'm a very empirical, scientific, logical, business-oriented kind of person. So anything that sounded like it was about crystals or chakras or Eastern thinking, I would immediately dismiss as woo bullshit. No, that can't possibly be the way forward. But then I reached a point in my life where I felt like I tried everything. And I initially dropped into a category of work around primal childhood deconditioning, which doesn't really seek to address any of the superficialities of what you're thinking or what you're doing. It looks into the deep causes of the conditioning we carry from our childhood, and it introduces tools which are much more to do with feeling your way to a solution rather than thinking a way to your solution. And it works around the ideas that people like Gabor Mate talk about a lot, about how trauma and baggage is stored in your body, in your hardware, not so particularly in your software. This kind of work involves body work, it involves breathing, it involves meditation, and particularly active and dynamic meditation that involves your body. It particularly involves group work and healing in community, based around the idea that we get damaged in our relationships, and so that's how we should heal as well. It taught me vulnerability. It taught me there's a mode of healing called exposure work, where you stand in front of your peers and you just vent whatever is coming from your heart in its authenticity at that moment, and you learn to trust. And that sense of being able to trust that everything I say in its truth and its authenticity is my truth and it is okay, and then what comes back at you from those who are listening to you is love and compassion and understanding. And you do that again and again, and then you end up in a place where you can bring that same energy into a relationship, into a friendship, and into sex and sensuality as well. I'm able to feel that way in sensuality because I'm able to feel that way in all of my life. Trust that what I am right now is what I need to be. And I had no idea the possibilities that this would open. I had no idea that this was going to be so empowering. So that's what worked.
So if we were to provide some advice, not from therapists, because we're not therapists here, but we are consumers actually of therapy. We're not saying that couple therapy doesn't work, because in fact it can be useful having kind of a third party helping the two people in the couple, sharing in front of someone, hey, you did X, but that made me feel epsilon and I hold these grudges against you, etc. So that's all great. What you're suggesting here is some sort of deeper work beyond this classical couple therapy, which allows you to work on yourself and learn to be vulnerable. I've been through this type of therapy as well. Funny enough, worked with the same therapist without even knowing each other before we got together. And I must say, I wouldn't be in the place where I am, and I wouldn't have learned to drop so much in my feminine had I not done this type of therapy, had I not done this exposure work, which is so hard and so difficult and so different from presenting in front of a group of 200 people your product or whatever, because you have to get out the shit that's deep down and even you don't want to hear, don't want to see. But only once you learn to do that, then you learn to be vulnerable, you learn to allow other people to be vulnerable in front of you without judging them or pitying them, but just being a safe container. And that safety, that safe space, is what Ali, you were talking about at the beginning, so that the couple can learn to drop in and maybe relax in bed and feel intimate and sensual, and then wherever it goes, but it doesn't really matter.
Yes. My advice here would be to stop pretending to yourself that the problem is the other person. Stop pretending to yourself that the problem is even the dynamic between you and the other person. Look deep into yourself. Look for your authenticity and look for your truth. I live my life by a principle that I always tell the truth. the truth will set me free. I lived so much of my life in lies and deception and trying to massage the truth and not being there. And I set a rule for myself that I will always tell the truth. But that's a hard lesson to live by properly, because first you have to figure out what your truth is, what you truly are, and that's not what your ego is telling you. Start by doing the work to figure out what your truth is. What is it that you're bringing to this relationship, and what is it that you need from it? And when you show up with that truthful, vulnerable energy, that will unlock the same thing in the other person, because if one person shows up in vulnerability and truth, that creates a safe space for the other person to do so as well. And you would be shocked how just opening that door in a little way then has an iterative effect, because then the other person opens a door, and then you feel safe to open another, and then they feel safe to open another. And before you know it, you are both out there in all of your messy, beautiful glory, available for each other.
Yeah, if we only all had a little bit more guts, right? Because I think looking at society today and how we grow up conditioned, what masculinity and femininity is, and especially I think for our generation, looking at the TV series and our parents probably, and porn and reading books about romantic relationships, it's all very stereotypical, right? When I listen to my girlfriends or women complain about their relationships, it is very often that, oh, he is not masculine enough. He is not the prince on the white horse. He doesn't invite me out for dinners enough, and he doesn't come home with flowers enough, and he doesn't make attempts for sex enough. But where's the female part in that? And I think the other way around as well, men can relax into a more feminine, vulnerable state where they can open up and talk about intimacy and sensuality and softer needs, right?
And speaking of sensuality, we actually have a beautiful workshop that we happen to be running these days, where we focus on learning sensuality and soft touch and providing a safe space. So if you're interested in learning more about this or coming to the next one, then just feel free to reach out to us. You'll find our contact details in the show notes. And I guess that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed our very first episodes with all of our stories. And if you're craving for more, you can grab our free guide, 10 Phrases to Help You Start Deeper Conversations with Your Partner. You will find the link in the show notes. And if you have any questions, topic suggestions, or simply you would like to share your own experience, maybe even anonymously, do send us an email or connect with us on social media. Again, all of our details are in the show notes. And if you enjoyed today's conversation or learned something new or something useful, don't forget to subscribe or even give us a 5-star rating. The more you guys do that, the more you can help us help others in similar situations. Thank you again for listening, and see you in the next episode.